Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast. In this episode, we dive into the unsettling case of Jennifer Farber Dulos, who vanished on May 24, 2019. Amidst a divorce and custody battle, her estranged husband, Fotis Dulos, and his partner, Michelle Trokinis, became the center of a shocking conspiracy. Today, we bring you up to the moment coverage from the courtroom as Trokinis faces trial, accused of a role in this presumed murder.
Now, I'm just going to have you look for a minute at Exhibit 7. That is Photograph 7 in the same Fort Jefferson Crossing file. You recall, you said you walked around the yard. Is that right?
Yes.
Did you see anything that looked disturbed? Did you?
No.
And there was a there's an outdoor like grill area here, right?
Correct.
And you walked around out there?
Yes.
You walked around this sort of covered credenza area with a like a porch, an open porch with these pillars?
Yes, sir.
And you remember there was firewood on the porch there?
I don't specifically remember the firewood, but...
In any event, this was very close to where the fireplace that you were inspected was, wasn't it?
Yes.
And you walked outside there as well as into the yard, correct?
Yes.
It's fair to say you checked everything.
Correct.
Or your team did.
Somebody on the team did, yes.
You were also aware that dogs had been brought in to search the property as well, right? State police dogs.
Yes, I was aware of that. I'm not sure of when.
But you know they were there maybe over the weekend before you got there?
I don't remember.
But you knew that was part of the investigation, right?
Yes.
And they were looking for trace evidence of somebody, right? Or something that would be relevant?
They were looking for what they were trained for.
Now, I understand, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, there was also a state police helicopter involved in the search at one point?
That I'm unaware of, sir.
Okay. I'm also going to just ask you about a couple more of these pictures before I then... I asked you about at 80 Mountain Spring, whether you looked at any, this is one of the pictures of one of the garages, correct?
Yes.
And we see on the garage floor, Do you remember which garage side this was, by the way?
This is the one closest to the house.
Okay. The garage floor has various stains and whatnot that we can see on the floor here. You see that?
Yes.
And then the same thing I'll show you with regard to the, I believe it's the other. And again, you see where I'm referring to, there's all these stains on the floor here.
Yes.
Did you take samples of any of these stains that were on the garage floor?
I did not.
Did you use any kind of presumptive testing or reagent to see whether it had something that might be of evidence or not?
After visual inspection, if anything looks suspect, then I would do the presumptive test with the Castlemyre.
All right, so did you believe that it was either oil or grease or something like that?
That's what I remember it to be.
And I'm just going to show you, that was picture 13. The same thing with now with picture 14. You see these stains. You observed them there that day, correct?
Yes. Floor.
And these are the other garages, the ones that are further away, the same garage?
This is the same garage on the house side.
Right. And for the record, it's the one with the blue Town of Farmington recycling bucket on the right side and the Farmington garbage receptacle also on the right side, right?
Yes.
This image. So let me just go back and like talk to you a little bit about the photocopies that you had seized and that you were trying to read some of it to us, right?
Yes.
They were in some kind of what looks like a computer bag, right?
Yes.
Did you seize the bag itself as well?
No, I did not.
Was there a computer in it?
No.
But it was the kind of bag that you might put I'm not going to use my... But it was the kind of bag one could put a computer in, right?
Yeah, it was approximately that size, sir.
You said that when you looked inside, you saw three separate photocopies, correct?
Yes.
And they weren't stapled together, were they?
No.
They weren't in a folder, were they?
No.
You don't know when they'd been placed in that bag, did you?
No.
You didn't know at that time even who had written them, right?
Correct.
Do you even know what order they were written?
No, I don't.
Do you even know if there were three separate sheets, right?
Yes.
One of them, I think you testified, looked like the original one that had the pink line on the side, right?
Yes.
With changes, though, right? The original had changes.
Yes.
Did you, from that, conclude that the photocopy had been made before information had been added to it? That would look like to you?
Objection. Cause for speculation.
There's been no... Well, what the testimony has been today is that Detective Riley read what was shown to the jury. The court does not recall evidence that he read as he did today those entries when he sees them. So you may ask a foundational question.
Of course, Your Honor. So if you recall, Ms. Manning asked you after you read what you could read that was legible from the photocopies, you were then asked to indicate what appeared to be an additional information on what looks like an original piece of paper, right?
Yes.
The one with the pink line on it.
Yes.
And that was all over to the right-hand side of it, mostly, except at the very bottom.
Yes.
Right? And all those extra references, and I'll show it to you again if you want, all seem to have to do with somebody named Pavel, right? It's all said Pawel, right?
Yes.
Those are the things that weren't on the photocopy that you found inside the black I'll call it a computer bag or hand bag.
That's correct.
You don't know where the original of the other two photocopies went.
No.
You don't know when the additional information was added to the original document.
I don't know that.
And just out of curiosity, because you know, at this time you're just collecting evidence, did you know someone by the name at that point of Pavel Gumieni? Did you even know that name at that point?
I knew the name during the investigation. I don't know where along that investigative timeline where I learned it.
And at the day you collected that evidence, you didn't know what relationship a Pavel had to Fotis Doulos?
I don't remember when I learned about Pavel.
So you don't know, as you sit here today, you have no recollection as whether you knew.
Objection, asked and answered.
Well, the thrust of the testimony is that he does not remember when he learned about either a relationship between Fotis Doulos and Gumieni, or when during the investigation he learned other information. That's how the court heard the testimony.
By the way, when you searched a home, you were asked questions about whether 80 Mountain Spring appeared to be lived in. And your answer was it appeared no one was living there, right? That was your answer before?
Yes.
Did it appear that Fort Jefferson Crossing was lived in?
Yes.
Did you know who had been living there? At the time?
Besides Fotis Doulos?
Right.
No, specifically. I don't remember seeing any mail or things like that.
Do you know whether Michelle Traconis lived there?
Positively. I don't remember if we found anything that would lead us to believe that.
Do you know if Michelle Traconis' daughter lived there?
I don't remember, sir.
And incidentally, do you recall when you went through this house seeing toys and other children's things in that house?
Yes, there were children's items, sir.
So you didn't see what you didn't know at that point whether any children actually lived there, though, right?
Yeah, I don't know, sir.
And did you also have any information as you were searching as to whether any other family members or other people were staying there at the house?
No.
I think I might be done. Let me just check my notes, please. By the way, when you were searching the vehicles at the and taking note of the contents of the vehicles at the Litchfield barracks, were you already at that point made aware of who drove those vehicles and at what point?
No, again, I don't think we knew at the time that we processed those vehicles where they kind of lined up in the timeline.
So you don't also know who might have had access to them?
That's correct.
Were they all registered to the Ford group?
Believe so.
When I say all, I'm referring to was the Raptor registered to the Ford group?
Yes.
Was the Suburban registered to the Ford group?
Yes.
Was the white Jeep Cherokee registered to the Ford group?
Yes.
I'll just have one moment, Your Honor. No further questions. Thank you.
They're redirecting.
Very brief, Your Honor. Detective Riley, just to be clear, the day you searched for Jefferson Crossing was what day?
That was It was the 3rd.
Okay, June 3rd. Just going to backtrack just a little bit. You went to, just to get the timeline down, you went to 69 Wells on May 25th. Correct?
Yes.
And Attorney Schoenhorn asked you a couple questions on cross-examination with respect to Fort Jefferson Crossing being seized or taken by the police on 531. Do you recall that line of question?
Yes.
Okay. So between, just to get the time, between 524 and 531, how many days is that?
Between 524
and 531, when Jefferson Crossing was seized by the police, how many days had passed?
7 days.
So for 7 days that the police did not have access to that house after Jennifer Dulos had gone missing?
Yes.
Okay. Now I'm going to draw your attention, if I can, a couple more questions. Do you recall Attorney Schoenhorn asking you some questions with respect to the Jeep Cherokee and particularly the license plate that came out of the inventory search? Do you remember that line of questioning?
Yes, ma'am.
And I believe you indicated you did not seize that license plate.
Correct.
If I can just pull it up. This is off of States 71, the file mark Chevy Suburban. I just want to be clear, we're talking about the same thing, picture 12. Oh, I'm sorry, not Chevy Suburban, the Jeep Cherokee, picture 12. If you can, take a look behind you, sir. Is that the license plate that you seized from the, or you took out of the vehicle and documented as part of the inventory search from the Jeep Cherokee?
Yes, it is.
Did you see any adhesive tape altering that license plate that day?
Objection, argumentative.
Well, the question is not argumentative. The question is, did you see any adhesive tape altering that license plate on the day on which those items were laid out? Overruled.
Did you, sir?
No, ma'am.
Now, I believe there's another photograph of it. This states 15. Is that the same license plate or a different one?
That's the same license, or it appears to be the same license plate. It is the same license plate. Sorry.
And again, no adhesive tape or any alterations on that license plate?
No.
And over here on that same photograph, there is the front right floor. What is that, sir? My cursor's over.
It appears to be a screwdriver.
Any blood-like stains on the screwdriver?
Not that we found.
So these items that you took out of the Jeep Cherokee, sir, were just through the process of the inventory search. Was there any blood-like stains or anything of note to seize for evidentiary value at that time?
No.
I have nothing further. Thank you.
Just very briefly, did you note the license plate number on the Jeep Cherokee that was actually on the Jeep at the time?
Not the memory, but we did write it down on our report, sir.
I'm going to show you photo 3 from that folder. You see the license plate that is displayed from photo 3?
Yes.
And for the record, that is AK25389?
Yes.
What was the license plate that you were just shown by Ms. Manning a minute ago that was in the vehicle?
Could you show that picture to us?
Absolutely. Showing you what has been marked as Exhibit 12 from this folder. AK25389, you see that?
Yes.
Is that the same number?
Same plate.
Same plate, same registration?
Same registration number, yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
Nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, Detective Riley. You may step down.
Thank you, Your Honor.
As the court understands, Attorney Manning, there are no other state's witnesses for today.
Not for today, Your Honor.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have concluded the testimony for today. We do plan to start tomorrow at 10 o'clock. So thank you for your attention. We ask that you not discuss the case, not take in any media reports about the case, and we plan to see you tomorrow. We're not adjourning yet. Did you have a matter
yes,
you
Judge,
want to bring to the court's attention?
I did just want to alert the court to a discussion that I had with Attorney Schoenhorn yesterday because it relates to a motion in limine that was filed by the defense in this case. So we do anticipate that former retired detective John Kimble is going to be testifying tomorrow with respect to certainly at least the defendant's first statement and possibly the second statement as well, depending on how far we get during the course of the day. Now, Attorney Schoenhorn had filed a motion in limine on January 10th to preclude reference to the defendant's assertion of her Miranda rights, including a request for presence of counsel. So I spoke with Attorney Schoenhorn, and I think we have an agreement on how we're going to do this, which is satisfactory to both parties, which is I'm going to ask Detective Kimble whether or not he had spoken with the defendant in the late evening hours of June 1st or the morning of June 2nd. Yes. And were arrangements made for her attorney to come to the police department the next day? Yes. Who was that? Andrew Bowman. And then we're going to really just pick up the first interview from the moment that Attorney Bowman is in the courtroom. And it's our intention to play that interview from that point in its entirety and then play the second interview in its entirety when we get there as well. So I just wanted to put that on the record. And so if there's any concerns about any of that, I just wanted that to be raised now.
That was my understanding. I think I'm sure Mr. McGinnis just misspoke when he said that Attorney Bowman in the courtroom, I think he meant at the police station.
Well, we've been spending a lot of time here, so.
Yeah, so.
But other than that,
he is correct in our agreement as to how we're going to proceed.
Is Detective Kimble the first witness?
He is, Judge.
He's officer Kimble. He's a police, Westport police officer.
And so how many witnesses are lined up for tomorrow?
So I anticipate the first interview, Your Honor, is approximately 2 hours and 45 minutes,
right,
even from the moment that I'm referring to.
Right.
And so currently we just have Detective Kimble lined up, and then I guess we're going to see where it goes if we get to the second interview. That interview in its entirety is, I think, 3 hours and 30 minutes or thereabouts. So,
Detective Kimble, the court remembers, was involved in both, correct?
Yes, there's actually a third interview, but that's going to be played later in the
right
trial. But yes, Detective Kimble was present for all three.
Okay, thank you. Do you need time tomorrow to make sure the video setup is going to be accurate and nothing comes through that shouldn't come through?
So I plan on clipping out the video tonight and creating a DVD, which would eliminate, you know, any portion in advance of Mr. Bowman's, you know, arrival at the police department. I think it picks up with Detective Flabby and the defendant in the room. So from that point forward, I think Attorney Schoenhorn knows what I'm referring to, because it's basically when the camera goes on in the afternoon, that's what we intend on playing. I did just want to indicate one additional thing for the record, which is I'm doing this, Your Honor, but again, I reserve the right, if I believe the defense has opened the door in some way to the invocation of the right to counsel, to perhaps introduce evidence of those invocations, depending on where it goes. But I told Attorney Schoenhorn that I would do that outside the presence of the jury, because I understand that there would be an objection. So I just wanted to put everyone on notice of that.
I just would go further, Your Honor. I would note that, as I understand the case law, if the state at any time elicits the fact that a person exercised their rights under the Fifth or the Sixth Amendment to remain silent, that is basically a structural error in a trial, which almost always leads to reversal. So I assume that the state would not want to jeopardize whatever they're doing by bringing in something that the Supreme Court of the United States has said it's an error of the most extreme, it's a structural defect in a trial. So Doyle versus Ohio is the case. I don't object to the reading of the rights, to having Attorney Bowman be there, or even the fact that they arranged to have her lawyer there to start. But, you know, to suggest that that opens the door, it would have to be a pretty wide barn door for that to happen. Let's put it that way.
So I didn't suggest any of that open the door. In fact, I'm suggesting the opposite. What I am suggesting, however, is that depending on the line of cross-examination, so, for example, if there's some claim of a language barrier or something of that nature, the fact that she understood her Miranda rights tends to rebut any claim that she didn't understand what was going on. So I guess we're going to see where it goes. He's incorrect when he says that our case law categorically bars invocations. That's untrue. And I'll get the court the cases that say that. I believe the seminal case is State versus Cabral or something like that. It's a 2005 case from our Supreme Court. Doyle versus Ohio actually doesn't have any applicability here because that refers to commenting on post-Miranda silence. And here she actually spoke with the police. So we're actually talking about apples and oranges. But this, Your Honor, will hopefully just be academic because we're going to see where it goes.
There is another matter that the court will first talk to counsel about at sidebar concerning the video. And the court knows that on a previous occasion, this issue was contested. And after our discussion at sidebar, the court will, if it thinks it is necessary, put certain matters on the record. So
yes,
if counsel would approach.
Court, we have to discuss with counsel.
1 minute, Your Honor.
Court just discussed with counsel certain segments of the video that may have caused concern, and it has been represented that that segment is not going to be offered. We'll stand adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Thank you.
All right. This honorable hearing court now stands adjourned tomorrow at 10 a.m.
There's more to come at the Michelle Trokinas trial in the Jennifer Farber Dulos case. The mystery deepens and justice seeks its course. Press subscribe now and stay tuned for more episodes unraveling the truths behind the most perplexing criminal cases from true crime today.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.